నమస్తే, సుస్వాగతం అండ్ వెల్కమ్ టు ఆర్ సండే ఎడిషన్ ఆఫ్ జ్ఞాన్ గంగా వర్డ్స్ ఆఫ్ విజ్డమ్ ఆన్ ఆ విరాట్ హిందుస్థాన్ సంఘం సోషల్ మీడియా ఛానల్స్. ఇట్స్ 8 PM ఇండియన్ స్టాండర్డ్ టైమ్ అండ్ వీఆర్ బ్యాక్ విత్ అనదర్ టాపిక్ టు డిస్కస్ అ వెరీ ఇంట్రెస్టింగ్ సబ్జెక్ట్, బీయింగ్ హిందూ ఇన్ అమెరికా. టుడే ఇస్ ఎపిసోడ్ నంబర్ 207 అండ్ విత్ డాక్టర్ సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం స్వామి వీ హ్యావ్ శ్రీ అయ్యర్ who will be discussing the subject in the next 45 minutes. As you all know, Sri Iyer has often been on our channel, and Sri Iyer is from the United States. He's an inventor, innovator, and out-of-box thinker. He has 37 patents to his credit, and in 2015 started the online portal pgurus.com, and his portal is daily sought after, and people look forward wanting to know what is the next disclosure on his channels on the various scams and irregularities. He is a colorful personality and draws with his pen books in various colors, and has written numerous books on various scams like Who Painted My Money White, Who Painted My State Purple, Who Painted My Lust Red, Rise and Fall of AAP, NDTV Frauds, C Company, and numerous other books and booklets. His latest book to be released shortly in this month in India is Paper In, Money Out. Look forward to his books, and very soon we'll start our discussion with the initial introduction by Dr. Subramaniam Swami on this interesting topic, being Hindu in America. Over to Dr. Swami.
Thank you, Jagdish. Don't be modest. The latest book is a joint authorship between Iyer and yourself. So, welcome to the club of authors. Maybe this is your first book, I think, in which you are name figures on the front page. Now, there's a nostalgia for me when I talk about America, because I went there in 1962 as a student who just got his master's degree, and I was just about 21, and I stayed till for 10 years, first as a student, and then cleared the general exams and wrote my PhD thesis. Then I became assistant professor, associate professor, and at the time I was they asked me to become a professor, they put a condition that I have to become a citizen of the US. And that I declined, and therefore I came back to India, and of course been through a very turbulent stay in these last almost 50 years. So, but America has lots of reasons for wanting to stay there, and there are reasons also why I prefer to be in India. But we want to hear from Iyer. Because the growth rate of Indian population so far, with all the restrictions that have been placed, is about 5% per year. And that's why in 75 years, I think we have gone up 15 times or something like that. So, but the most important thing about it is that nobody has any complaints of the Indians of being either drug addicts or fellows who engage in crime, and they are unemployed, begging, none of this. And so there's a widespread feeling that Indians are people who are contributing to the healthy part of the American society. And as a consequence, after a lot of ups and downs, the Americans, I think, have finally, and I think Iyer and also the other distinguished panelists here, and Ramesh, who's also speaking to us from India, from America. And the thing is that the Americans have now decided that they would probably now expand the scope. Am I right? I hope I'm right. Expand the scope, the number of Indians who would be made citizens, which is earlier on very restricted. But now they think that they will be ideal citizens for the United States. So as a consequence, Indians are going to be very important. Furthermore, Indians are also quietly spreading the ideas of Hinduism, and Americans are loving it. Yoga is now, I mean, I would be surprised with so very soon the Americans will claim it is American, but yoga, then there was in fact an article in 2009 when the editor of the Newsweek wrote with a headline in the edit column of us in the Newsweek that now we are all Indians. And then she went on to say that so many Indian ideas are being now looked upon as scientifically superior, like instead of burial, she says cremation is better, and the Hindus have introduced that. So that article, you know, headlined, now we are all Indians, woke people up that the Indians are no more going there just to earn some money and then come back, but people who are making a difference, not only in terms of the scientific talent they have or the educational talent they have, but they are also making a difference in terms of philosophy and yoga and pranayam and prayers and so many things. And some have even converted to Hinduism. And I'm told that the rate is something alarming to some people. But very prominent people, the great actress Julia Roberts, she converted her husband also to Hinduism. All her children are also converted to Hinduism. She comes regularly to India to go to these places. So I'm finding more and more people saying I'm a Hindu. So in this context, I would say that some amount of jealousy is bound to be generated, and especially those left behind under similar circumstances. And so I would call upon the two Americans here, Sri Iyer and Ramesh, and give us a perspective on how Indians are progressing in United States and what are the obstacles. My own daughter, elder daughter, Geetanjali, was born there, so she's become an Indian citizen. Her husband has also become an Indian citizen. I mean, an American citizen. So they keep me, give me feedback. And so I'll come in, you know, in terms of questions later on. But at the moment, over to Sri Iyer and Ramesh.
Thank you, Dr. Swami. It's always a pleasure and joy to be on VHS channel. My habit is always to go to P Guru. So again, slip of tongue. I was going to say that Jagdish Shetty is being modest. He's also the co-author of the new book. You can see the poster on my back. The book is being released. It's going to come to a event place near you. So viewers, wherever you are, get ready. In the next 4 to 6 weeks, we will be coming to your town. And it might be both of us, it might be one of us, but definitely this book is a work that has come out of looking at the last 30 years as to what has happened in India and how somebody who shall stay unnamed managed to always become the finance minister regardless of what the coalition was. And he would have become BJP's finance minister also. But somebody put his foot down, and he was the president of party at that time. He put his foot down, and this man couldn't make it into BJP. Dr. Swami, you know who I'm talking about. Let's not give the person name. No need to do that. You can find all about it by reading the book. This is a sequel to my book, Who Painted My Money White? Same characters, and the story is a little bit more expanded. It's very nuanced. It is my belief that India is very reliant on its middle class. And this is something that the middle class needs to understand, how their hard-earned savings, whether it is in banks or now in this thing called SIP that most people in India, working class, are asked to invest in, special investment plans or system investment plan, I don't remember exactly, or systematic investment planning, something like that. How this is being put in and this money is being taken for granted. Dr. Swami, if BJP doesn't make it and if the other side, what I call as dot coalition, I also call it Navagraha coalition because nobody seems to be looking in the same direction, yet they call themselves a group. And, you know, they'll again raid the you know, public and private institutions and make a mess of it. These people have made a fine art of this. Anyway, so this is just my political angle on what can happen if you don't read this book. I want all of you to read it, and I'm hoping to be there on the VHS meeting that we're going to have on the 27th. Of course, this is for members of VHS, where I'll be giving a little bit more details on this. Now, let's come back to being Hindu in America. Dr. Swami, we have a sort of a puzzle here. You know, 70% of Indian Americans voted Democrat. Yet, it's the Democratic Party that is now trying to stick it to the Hindu Americans by trying to pass this caste discrimination bill. Now, if you go and lift the lid a little bit and look underneath and see who are the people behind this bill, you have the usual suspects. Who are the usual suspects? ISI, Muslim Brotherhood, Alphabet Soup organizations, all of whom have supported, including the company called Equality Labs, which produced a flawed survey. And then the Department of CRD, California Rights Department, without checking, took that thing hook, line, and sinker. And they decided to start suing people left and right, saying that you are doing caste discrimination. The first lawsuit that they started was against Cisco. And in that case, what happened was they sued three people. There were two managers, and the third was the company itself, Cisco. As the suit progressed, they found, the defendants found, that there were some glaring omissions. And in 2021, even the judge who was looking at this case threw out this caste determination survey, this caste discrimination survey, as unscientific. So by 2021, Equality Labs and its Dalit Diva knew that they were on shaky ground. Yet, they have the gumption, the brazenness, the arrogance, and the hubris to keep going from state to state, city to city, and they have passed these laws called caste discrimination laws. In fact, I'm very sad to say this thing, that the latest one was at a place called Cupertino. Cupertino is a city where Apple is headquartered. And the Cupertino city, where 30 to 35% probably are Indian Americans, they decided to pass a resolution saying that they are completely against this bill called the SB 403, which says that the California state will implement caste discrimination as one of the factors where they will be looking to see if there is anybody discriminating on the basis of caste. So, Dr. Swami, you and I know, when we come to the United States, we are coming here based on our merit, based on what we think we can achieve. In the times of high socialism, there was no other way to do it. Either you migrated to United Kingdom or you migrated to United States. So some went to UK, some went to United States. That's how I landed up. I'm sure you were even before that. So this was how it was. Meritocracy is what we looked at. If somebody was good, we hired them, we used them, we promoted them, we encouraged them. Caste was never discussed, nor was even mentioned. And yet, this survey had the gall to selectively cherry-pick data and then somehow convince the Democratic-run California departments to go and sue. So what happened after that was, once the basis, the caste discrimination survey basis, got thrown out by the judge, the two individuals, one of whose name is Iyer, Sundar Iyer, the other one's name is Ramana Pompella, these two said that we are going to counter sue you. And so what happened was California Rights Department, which is supposed to be the one overseeing any kind of discrimination in any company in the state of California, they dropped these two, the lawsuit against these two. But they wanted some moral victory from this. They have been trying to make Cisco to somehow accept to some form of a concession, because they want to take a moral victory out of it. Last I know, sir, this is as of last week, Cisco has refused to do so. People don't know this thing. I'm saying this for the first time because our wide audience is a worldwide audience. And the reason for that is many Cisco employees wrote to their executives, their management, saying that, look, already our names are tarnished. And this is not true. And it has been proven to be not true. The data that came out of the lawsuit proved beyond doubt that discrimination was not the factor for what the person who sued claimed. Dr. Swami, there is a cross current here. It's not only this Muslim Brotherhood, ISI who are funding it. There's also the Dravida group. You know, the you have a very good name for it, sir. It starts with P and ends with S. I will not mention it here. And it's very apt. So there are not all of them are so bad. I call them Dumils. It's still a little bit softer. They are also involved in this. And essentially, this is hate. Hate for some people without basis. And this is where the legal part is. Oregon has also started doing its own version of this caste discrimination bill. And in fact, Oregon is not even allowing the people to express their opinion about the bill, because the bill is actually read in a common public place, Dr. Swami. You place it on record for people to read and comment about it. Then there is a day when everybody go in and registers their comments. Now, this bill SB 403 is going to pass most likely, because even though overwhelming number of people have said that they are opposed to it, it is still the lawmakers feel that they need to pass it. Now, I did some inquiries, Dr. Swami. What I found out was that there has been a diktat from the Democratic Central Organization that thou shalt toe the party line. It's like a whip, sir. Equivalent of a whip, that thou shalt pass this thing. Because what has happened is America is in the clutches of wokeism. And these are one of the unfortunate consequences. The wokes have come out with something called as a critical race theory, where they wanted to put the race as a middle one, how the blacks were they racially discriminated, the Native Indian Americans were racially discriminated, and so on. Now, this equality labs wants to take that and apply it to caste, and they want to come up with critical caste theory. Now, the problem with this is that it is unfounded and it is essentially flawed. And this person is a fraud. But yet, somehow, somewhere, people are still willing to drink this Kool-Aid and get along. And in fact, the California State University campus, the entire body has said that we shall be using this. UCSD. I, if you remember, you met the chancellor who was an Indian, Rajiv Bhargava, if I remember correctly, when you were in UCSD campus. You had gone there to give a lecture, sir. I was there as part of that, 2016, if I remember correctly. Now, right. What they have done is they have identified a set of jobs that they are saying will only be, the people who will be considered in that are people who consider themselves discriminated. And you know how this equality labs classified? They classified your last name as the determining factor as to whether you are an upper caste or a lower caste. But these dodos are so dumb. I can't find any other words for it. I can't be sugarcoating this word. They are so dumb that one of their last names, which is Soundara Rajan, is also used by every community in India. So there is a basic flaw in the way they have gone about it. This is just the caste discrimination suit. My problem with this is our children, my children and my grandchildren, whenever they happen, they are all being taught by something that they have no clue about. They have no idea. They have never practiced it. And yet somebody wants to shove it down the throat of everyone. Now back to that that Cupertino case. In Cupertino City, when they tried to pass that, it's called as a proclamation. When they tried to pass that proclamation, the same set of noisemakers came and they tried to disrupt the process. In the whole melee, one person who is for Dalit, he's a Dalit Bahujan, and he was against this discrimination. He unfortunately collapsed and died right outside the city council. And what happened was these people were upset with him because he was basically poking holes at their theory. Now, so this has become very big now. And we have to really, the Hindus, most of us are sleepwalking, because like I told you, 70% of Indian Americans vote Democrats, and it is the Democrats now who are sticking it to them. Some Democrats realize that this could be a problem. Many think that you guys have been hiding this, because the textbooks in America, they have a very bad picture of Hinduism. I'll give you an example. It's a sixth grade textbook for sixth grade students, middle school they call it. There are only two depictions of Hinduism. One is Nataraja. Nataraja dancing, they literally interpret that picture. Nataraja dancing on a baby. Look how bad this is. The second picture is of Kali drinking blood. That's it. That is Hinduism for them. And they have also graded it, sir. Hindu is the least obnoxious. Hindutva is worse than that. And Sanatana Dharma, oh my God, that is radioactive. Who does this definition? There are lots of us who are wondering who came up with this idea. Unfortunately, some of the Indian American congressmen and women happen to drink from the same well. And when I tried to, you know, tell them, look, this is not true. Hindu, Hindutva, Sanatana Dharma, they all mean the same thing. And I even tried to explain, Tva means ness. You can't exactly translate a Sanskrit word into English. So being Hindu is Hindutva. So every Hindu is also going to be practicing Hindutva. And Hindu as a word itself is not mentioned in our Vedas. It is Sanatana Dharma that is mentioned. Hindu is difficult. You have to go look very deep to find mention of this word Hindu. Like you mentioned so many times, it could be the Sandhi of two words. And so on and so on. Hima and Hindu Saga. But my point here is, most of the Hindus, there are 4 million of us, about 2 million are still sleepwalking. They are all in this I, me, myself. Nothing wrong with that. They all come here, put down roots. They want the best for their children because they figure we have gone through hell and come out. At least let our children have a better future. So by the time the child enters the third grade, the parents have already planned right from the waking moment to the time the child goes to sleep, what that child will do. Unfortunately, going to the temple, reading from scriptures, reading even Chandamama, reciting a few shlokas doesn't find mention there because they feel that these will not get their children admission in Harvard. So this is the mindset with which people are operating. And you have to now understand that when this discrimination thing passes in California, this is actually going to work against everybody. The other problem was because of some mischievous elements that are, in India, in the United States, like, for example, those who seek Khalistan and these equality labs kind of organizations have gone and talked to some communities. One of them is called Ravidasias. They are Punjab people who are, they consider themselves Bahujan Samaj. And they are all standing against it. They don't realize that when this is going to be implemented, again, the formula is being provided, a faulty formula by these people. Then you look at the last name and that's how you determine it. And the first last name they have targeted as the most forward class is I-Y-E-R. Dr. Swami, it is good that you don't call yourself an Iyer. Otherwise, you will be also in that hit list. And same with you, Ramesh. So I'm not going to change my name. I'm sticking here. I'm fighting it out. And I am willing to take on any expert, the so-called experts who want to talk about the difference between Hindu and Hindutva or Hindu and Sanatana Dharma. So 30 million Americans today, about 330 million is the population. One in 11 is a practitioner of yoga. And who was the first yoga teacher? Lord Shiva. Who were the first set of students? The 7 Saptarishis. So you, when you do this thing once a week, twice a week, whatever the frequency, you essentially are practicing Sanatana Dharma. And so what has happened is now they are trying to say yoga is not Hindu. And these are all, again, the Dumils work, sir. These Dumils are, half-baked. There's a word for it that we all start with A and ends with S, 8 letters. That's all they are. Pardon my French. And I know I'm going to get some stick for this. It doesn't matter because I have had it up to here. I've never discriminated against anyone. And I believe that anybody with any last name should not be discriminated because of that. What about a baker? What about a butcher? What about a tailor? How many bakers are still baking cakes? How many butchers are running meat shops? How many tailors are still stitching suits? How is it okay for the Western last names and not ours? And even this last name business is a huge mischief by the British. In 1871, when the first time they started collecting census, some of the people who were collecting census, they asked the person who they wanted to ask, who are you? They gave the, their name. Then they had this format like what it is in the in UK. They had a first name and then they had what is called as a given name or a family name, surname, you can call it. Any one of these three. And they needed to fill that field. And they couldn't figure out what to put there. The way India used to have was, it was your village name, your father name, and then your name. In your case, it is true. I don't know why you don't mention your village name, but you are that. Your father is Subramaniam, you are Swami.
Yes.
So the easiest way to understand this is Sachin Ramesh Tendulkar. Tendulkar is, Tendul, I think, is the name of the village. And Ramesh is Sachin's father. So this happens to be followed even today in many parts of South India. Whereas in the North, when they were trying to figure out how to fill this family name, last name business, they started asking, what is your caste? And that became their last name. Example, Bhimrao Marat. That is why his teacher, who happened to be a Brahmin, he said, listen, this is your story, sir. I'm just repeating it. And I'm giving you reference. Yeah. That if you use that name, you will be discriminated. I will use my name as your last name. So in the school record itself, it got changed. That's how he became Dr. B.R. Ambedkar. So this method is now become very convenient for them to say, you shall use this thing to determine whether somebody is of a persecuted class or the persecuting class. All sorts of nonsense. It's very difficult to use something like this to qualify it. And I'm very sure that this will not test, this will not set this in a court of law. It will not stand in a court of law. But until then, you have to grin and bear it. And in fact, the worst case scenario is that these days, Dr. Swami, when somebody applies for a job, the human resources department, the HR, doesn't even look at it. They go through, put it through a software. The software looks for keyword match, and then only it takes it to the next level where an HR person actually looks at it. For one job, there'll be 1,000 applicants. Only 10 will get shortlisted this way. So it's very easy for the software to add a last name, Hindu last name. And then it doesn't matter whether you are lower class or upper class or any class. You are out. You don't get a job. That's why I say that these people who are doing this, they want to somehow create something for themselves without working. They want to make money because the idea, Equality Labs idea, it's a startup company. Its idea is to sell training programs to all companies, how you shall implement this caste discrimination. So this is like, I set the rule and then I'll tell you how you should implement the rule. The only problem with this is the rule itself is flawed. So we have to fight it with every in every forum that we can. So this is going on. Many people are waking up. They are understanding the problems. They are understanding what the future entails. Many know that their future, their children, their grandchildren will suffer if they don't do something now. So that is going on. So this is what being Hindu means today, sir. I have more things to add, but I think this kind of captures most of the situation as it stands today. I did not prepare anything. This is something that has just been, you know, in my heart. I had to tell our viewers worldwide because, mark my words, it is coming to your country. It's already passed in the United Kingdom. The only thing that is stopping this from being implemented is it is going to cost the government £20 million. And they said it is not worth doing that. And Pandit Satish Kumar Sharma has been fighting it there. In fact, he even came to California, came to this town of Fremont, whose state senator is the one who's actually championing the bill. And this person is from Afghanistan. Her name is Aisha Wahab. Doesn't know two words about caste. Doesn't have any clue. So clearly somebody wrote and gave it to her. So this is the level to which politics has descended to. Some Democrats realize the flaw in this. Will this reflect itself in the 2024 elections? I think it will. Because Vivek Ramaswamy, maybe he may not become the Republican candidate, but he has been able to set the narrative on many fronts. For example, looking at his surge in popularity, he is now in double digits, Dr. Swami, from the Republican slate. He's in double digits now, 11% or so. And the number two person, Ron DeSantis, is also around that. So now it has become neck and neck. And if you think that there's a possibility Donald Trump could be disqualified from running for president in 2024, it's Vivek suddenly becomes very serious contender. So what is happening is, whenever he goes for town hall meeting, there are people who ask questions, oh, I'm a Christian and I'm not comfortable with the fact that you are a Hindu. So then he actually is very proud of being a Hindu. That is again another thing I have to say. Many Indian American politicians have converted to Christianity.
The or only two change that their names, three, or at least change their names to sound Christian.
Well, Rohan Khanna. Well, Radha Krishnamurti, these are the two Indian Americans who still are Hindu. Pramila Jayapal has become Christian, I believe. She can come and refute me and then say that, okay, I go to the temple. I don't know. But all the other people, even the latest one called Sri Thanedar, he's also a Christian. Preston Kulkarni, he's not a member of Congress today, but he's running for Congress from Texas. So these are all things that they have to do to try and blend with the voters, that Venn diagram. So what Vivek Ramaswamy has been doing is, he said, look, this is Hinduism, not very different from Christianity. And he started drawing parallels. Then finally, he summed it up saying that I am running for the commander in chief of this country, not pastor in chief. One line, he decimated the argument. So we have some people who are enlightened. They are willing to go. They are willing to fight it out. We, as a community, Hindu Americans, we need to really strengthen Vivek's hands. And let's hope that he becomes at least a running mate, if not the candidate. And if that happens, you would have somebody at the age of 37. That is the youngest age you can be to run for president of the United States. He could very well become the president. And he is not part of the establishment. He has never run for office. He has been a successful entrepreneur. He's a multimillionaire. He's using his own money, so he doesn't have funds problem. And therefore, he doesn't have to go and ask somebody saying that if you put money in my campaign, I will do X, Y, Z for you. So a lot of things are going for him. However, the people who are supporting him are the educated Republicans. It's a very small set. We have the blue collars who have now become Republicans. They need to understand and support him, get behind him. And then the moderate Democrats. I'm sure many are uncomfortable with some of the stands that this group called the Squad takes. Pramila Jayapal is the cheerleader there. There's another lady called Ilhan Omar, rabbit. Another lady called Rachida Talib, another rabbit person. All these people keep calling Israel as racist. The reason they want to do that is today Israel, tomorrow India. Ilhan Omar said that there is genocide being committed on the Muslims of India, when the reverse is true. So we are actively battling this disinformation and misinformation. And this is where Hindus of America need to really get behind. Guys, watch YouTube videos of peak gurus. I have been very factual. I don't hold a brief for any Democrat, nor do I hold a brief for any Republican. I'm an independent. I'm politically also independent. I vote based on issues, what, who does. I've already had the pleasure of hosting the two Hindu Indian American congressmen on my platform, Radha Krishnamurti and Ro Khanna. An interesting thing is, when Ro Khanna's interview aired, both the Hindus were not happy and the Muslims were also not happy. Because I made him to commit that he will pass a resolution in the Congress supporting that in 1971 there was Hindu genocide in Bangladesh. Sir, my point is, why fight a battle at a state level about caste discrimination if I can make this whole thing truthfully displayed as to how many Hindus were killed? And they're not talking about Winston Churchill and what he did. We're talking about 1971. There are copious amounts of records. So this is where things stand now. However, every passing day, things are getting better. People are becoming more aware. They're also challenging the existing established concept. So a lot of things are going, but still long way to go. I did a quick survey of all the politicians. I'll finish, sir. 1 minute. I did a full quick survey of all politicians from Democrats and Republicans in the United States who happen to be Indian American. All but one or two are Democrats. So that's where things stand.
Okay.
Ramesh. Thank you.
No, sir. You finished. Do you have anything to say for what Sri said so far?
Oh, I?
Yeah. do you have any feedback from what Sri said? You wanted to mention a few things in the middle, so I thought, do you have anything to say?
No, you are also from the same country.
Okay.
So you first give your view, and then I will ask the others, and finally I'll conclude. Yes, go ahead.
No problem. So thank you, Dr. Swami. Thank you, Sri. Sri pretty much elaborated, Dr. Swami, about this so-called bill, SB 403, promoted by an Afghan Muslim woman, I mean, which is like bizarre. And when one of the other senators at the state level told specifically to her, saying that you have no clue what the word caste means, you have to define it, she was unable to say anything, but she mentioned same thing, that a caste is something that a person perceives himself to be. So tomorrow I can declare myself to be a Dalit. I mean, that's exactly her response. She said caste cannot be defined. It is what the person, any person perceives to be. What is that perceives to be? With such an open-ended word, it won't stand the scrutiny of law. But her exact response was, with respect to the concern that including caste will force persons, the particular person of South Asian descent to identify having caste, the bill was crafted carefully to avoid this outcome. The bill's definition of caste deliberately refers to a person's perceived caste. So who defines that? So, Dr. Swami, this bill, even though at a state level is garnering support and doing things, it will get killed in Supreme Court when it goes to the court, because A, there is no word called caste in the American Constitution. So you cannot keep defining some new words and putting words into the American system, which doesn't exist. Caste doesn't exist in America. So that's one. Number two, Dr. Swami, Hindus. Just like India, Hindus in America are spineless. Very few people are fighting up. I mean, Sri is putting up a big fight in there, and there are some other individuals who are putting up a fight. But in general, Hindus are the largest non-Christian minority in America. Okay? And in majority of the cases, they are, in terms educated, affluent, or active members of the society. They're not like freeloaders. They're not anything like that. They either do a business or they're in a professional system. There are some politicians. There are a lot of lawyers, inventors, and stuff like that. But their contribution to the American political system is almost nil, barring a few that are trying to come up. And whoever are trying to come up don't want to show that they're Hindu. Whereas if you look at Muslims, they are very proud of themselves, respectfully, very proud of themselves. They don't change. They are not ashamed to call themselves whatever they are. They are very respectful to their own religion, and the society accepts that. The Hindus do not do that. And that is the reason why I think when Sri raised this point, the perception of others about Hindus are still very vague. And that is what you see in the that is getting reflected in the textbooks. But it's not the case with Muslims. They are shown in a very different light because they stand up for their own religion. Hindus do not. Hindus think just by going to a temple here and there one or few days, they think they stand up. It is not, Dr. Swami. Sadly, the reason why the Hindus are like this, in spite of all the advantages the Hindus have, is their own doing. And I think if people like Vivek Ramaswamy, who is unabashedly not going to be apologized, very clearly made it clear that, why should I apologize? I'm a proud Hindu, as he said. He said, I'm going to be commander-in-chief, not a pastor-in-chief. He made it very clear to Christian channels. He goes on Christian channels and establishes as to why the Hindus and Christians kind of think alike. Their ideology is pretty much the same. He studied in a Catholic school. He knows the Bible better than most of the so-called Christians in America. So in a way, it is a good, welcome change. Unless the Hindus stand up then for themselves, Dr. Swami, it is going to be a sorry state. Sri had already has given us a forewarning here that it is going to be a difficult state, because casteism is again a Trojan horse, Dr. Swami. The slow cancer is the first bit of cancer being introduced, and it's just going to blow up. And we don't have the same kind of society that we have in India. So unfortunately, the Hindus are going to, they are not proud to be Hindus. In a recent survey in America, less than 10% of the Americans claim that they are proud Americans. That among the college going, I'm not talking about the entire population, I'm talking about the younger generation. They don't want to call themselves proud Americans because they feel that it means that you're a Trump supporter and stuff like that. That is the extreme which things are moving. Similarly, I think the number of people who identify themselves as proud Hindus, I'm pretty sure is way low compared to other religions in this country. Dr. Swami. The bottom line, Hindus need to stand up for their own rights. They have to come together with the other institutions. I think HAF is one of the institutions that's trying to do something, because they don't want to be sounding too extreme. So they're trying to walk the middle line, but also be more closer to the Hinduism side. There are many institutions that have a Hindu in the name, but totally anti-hate. I mean, their Hindu phobia is high. I think, see, there is one organization, there is some Hindu or something which is a part of it.
It's Kona, Hinduism. Kona. Council of Hindus of North America. Kona. C-O-H-N-A.
Yeah, so but it's totally a Hindu-phobic organization. They can start saying that, Hindus are nothing, but they are saying Hindus are Brahmins. That's its definition. And not.
Oh, hold on. I think you meant Hindus for human rights. That is from the
Hindus for you. Not Kona is not. Kona is part of that other thing. Kona is supporting this because they're against campus, right? Hindu phobia in campuses. Yeah, yeah. I think you did a show like that. I think there's another organization that has a Hindu in their name.
Hindus for human rights, HFHR.
So that's what I wanted to say, Dr. Swami, because unfortunately, Hindus don't want to stand up and fight. I think they could learn a lesson or two from you and at least start standing up for their own simple identity. It's an issue of identity and what their ideology stands for.
Just to finish your thought, Hindu Americans form 1% of the population of the United States and they contribute 6% to the tax.
Okay.
Taxes collected, they are 6%. Yeah.
Yes. What are we getting in return, Sri? What are we getting in return is the question.
Remember that cartoon that came in the 50s? Nehru is a cow and all the minorities are drinking milk. And then the gobar is coming out and that's where the Hindus are.
I have others also.
First of all, before I hand it over to my colleagues to give their opinion, let me say, first of all, please educate the Americans that we have two classifications. One is called Varna and the other is called Jati. Now, what is this caste? I don't know where the Portuguese shoved it down your throat and we are just repeating. They called it costos and we are now talking about caste. Now, caste is a mechanism, a system or a way of referring to people whose blood group should not cross. That is, in the time of a marriage, you can't, for instance, your brothers and sisters can't marry each other. You will get mongoloid idiots as children. So therefore, they have this rules that, this blood group and you can marry your mother's brother, but you can't marry your father's sister. All these things are written out and they are based on the caste system. And Varna is the fourfold thing, which has got nothing to do with birth. If you want an authority for it, please go read Bhagavad Gita. In four different places, Krishna says it's got nothing to do with birth. If you are a jnani, tyagi, sahasi, you are a Brahmin. Can you be from another, born of another caste? For instance, Vishwamitra was born as a child of a Kshatriya family. But he became the biggest Maharishi of all of us because he was, by gunas, he was a Brahmin. There's no such thing as a caste as a nomenclature for a Brahmin or a Kshatriya. It's a division of labor and it had no ups and downs. Now, as far as the untouchables are concerned, they were a microscopic number. It's only after the Islamic invasions that this number grew. But the fact of the matter is that their children were never supposed to be scheduled castes. So, many of the things that we had in terms of checks and balances have disappeared because of what happened to us due to imperialism and before that, the Islamic invasion. But two things must be separated. Please explain to the Americans, caste is not Varna. And if they don't know the difference, then they should sit down and take a class from you. Okay, over to Jagdish. Who wants to do it next, Jagdish? Yeah, Arvind, you can lead. Your after all, Pandit also.
Yeah, Dr. Swami, first of all, I'll just make a comment on what you said about the prohibiting marriages between the sects. In fact, this is not the caste, it is the gotra. Original gotras are the 7 original gotras, which were including sub-gotras and now about 108 or so. That means if people belonging to same gotra, the boy or the girl, they get married, then there is a genetic problems and all that. But nothing to do with caste. Because, for example, you are from Kashyap Gotra. A person, Kashyap Gotra may be a Brahmin. A person from Kashyap Gotra may also be a Thakur. Or maybe some other caste. So caste has nothing to do with gotra. So that is number one. Number two, I don't think this concept of caste and gotra is also being applicable in US. When Sri Iyer has mentioned about this, the ordinance or something against the caste. I mean, I don't think they are considering gotra. He named some of the surnames. For example, he said I-Y-E-R identifying like that. But are they also going up to that level that they are also considering gotras? Because all Hindus have some gotra or the other. I mean, they can't be a Hindu without a gotra. But
don't use the word caste. Use the word varna. So varna and gotra. This is the two divisions for different reasons. Varna is a scholar is a Brahmin by varna. A warrior is a Kshatriya. The man who does business is a Vaishya, and the man who kills the land is a Shudra. That's all it was. And it had nothing to do with birth. I can give you, for example, Vedavyasa's mother was a fisherwoman. But he became Maharishi. Even Valmiki was born in the Dalit family. He became a Maharishi. He didn't take the so-called Varna of his parents. So, therefore, none of this has got to do with birth, except blood group is there in Gotra. That's all.
Right. So, now coming back to the narration given by Sri Iyer and both the Ramesh Swami also, about the current position of Hindus in America. You see, you are 1% of the population, you are 4 million in numbers, and you have Hindus occupying the highest positions, not only in corporate world, but even in academic world. Look at the top university professors. I'm sure you in every university will find 2 Indians or 3 Indians and mostly Hindus. So when we talk about such a powerful community, how can US administration or any other non-Hindu community try to victimize the Hindus?
Arvindji, bigger issue is, even the Indian government is just watching this silently instead of saying, put their foot on, saying, why are you dividing our thing?
Oh, Indian government silent in India also against Hindus. It is people like Dr. Swami who is fighting for Hindus, not government.
Yeah.
Sir, there's one other thing. I'm seeing a lot of comments here also. People are selectively cherry picking data to suit their fancy. And the truth is, up until 1820s, when Lord Macaulay came and dismantled the Gurukul system, you went in and then the Guru decided what you were good at and you took up that. Also, the enrollments there for Shudras, because there is no Dalit. Dalit is an 1930s term and it is everything has some politics behind it. Originally, if we go at the 4 Varnas, so the Shudras are one of the highest percentage of people studying. How do you explain that? If they were discriminated, they should not even be going into Gurukul. So these are all things that, see, I'm seeing a lot of nonsense here. They want to cling on to these beliefs, saying that this fellow said this thing. Oh, you want me to go and read another book? All I'm saying is that you don't know enough about this. there is somebody who's trying to make money by setting the rules. They want to set the question paper. They also want to give you the solutions because they want you to buy the solutions book, and they make money out of this. Purely, it's a money-making business. We have been trying to work to correct the academic curriculum for the past 15 years, Arvind Chaturvedi ji. 3 or 4 lawsuits have already been fought. That's where this thing I told you about being Hindu is the least problematic. If you are a follower of Hindutva, that is worse. If you are a follower of Sanatan Dharma, they say, oh my goodness, this fellow is radioactive. This is how the people who have written the textbooks feel.
Yeah.
When I started asking some tough questions, they went and complained to the judge, saying that this fellow shouldn't be asking these questions. And the unfortunate fact is, Hindus have allowed somebody else to define them. That is where Hindus went wrong. You see, this is who is Audrey Trushki? Who is that other fellow from Colombia who wants to translate the Sanskrit text? How many panditas are there in India who are doing now? I mean, they'll do it for a pittance. Sir, today in Google...
Let me stop you and ask you a question, because for our knowledge of the viewers also it is important. So you mean to say in America the Hindus lack leadership? I mean, there's
not the kind of leadership that is needed. There are people who are not proud to be Hindu like the way I am. And only now you're seeing Vivek Ramaswamy taking a stand. And they understand this thing because you have to understand. See, I told you, Dr. Chaturvedi, I told you at the beginning, the parents who come to the United States are so focused on succeeding, and they feel like their children should be given the most focused education so that they can go and become a Harvard graduate. So what happens is religion, culture, shlokas, some girls learn Bharatanatyam, boys don't even do that. Some very small percentage learn singing or mridang or tabla. But these are all very, very small numbers. We are apologetic of calling ourselves Hindu. In fact, there's a derisive term used to describe Hindus in the US. We are called coconuts. Brown on the outside, white on the inside.
Interesting.
Before
I have two questions.
Yeah.
Yes. One.
No, you go ahead, Dr. Swami.
No, I just want to give one more example because I'm before your time in America, and things were much, much worse than they are today.
I mean, there's so much
after your software engineer revolution, Indians are seen in a totally different way than at my time. When I passed my general examination in 6 months instead of 2.5 years, which was normal, people asked me, are you really an Indian? And those days, I'm talking about 61, 62, 63, I was even asked by people on the road whether Indians have tails, like monkeys. So, I mean, we have come through a long stage. What I'm saying is this, that essentially speaking, we must be able to make this distinction and teach people that when they say caste, don't allow them to use the word caste. Say, you be specific, or do you mean Varna or you mean Gotra? I would even say Jati is also sometimes used for Gotra, but anyway, Gotra is a better word. So Gotra or Varna, and then trap them into it instead of defending, say, the word caste. Anyone saying the word? Yes, Jagdish?
Yeah, I have two short questions, especially from an Indian perspective regarding this caste legislation, what Sri Iyer and Ramesh Swami are talking about. When an Indian applies to a university or a job, he is assuming he's from India or he's from there. Who is discriminating him? First of all, we Indians here are not able to understand what is this caste discrimination we are talking about. Is the educational institution discriminating? Is the employer discriminating? What is this legislation all about?
Allegedly,
I mean, I understand people going from India.
Jagdish ji, this case came about allegedly that some Cisco guy was discriminating his subordinates or something. This guy, so they just blew this out of proportion and they're saying it is applicable to everything, even though it doesn't exist. So you're trying to apply a medicine to some new disease that's not even existing in the world, in this part of the world. That is the situation, though, Jagdish. Unfortunately, it just came out of some very small non-trivial, which was thrown out of court. The case against Cisco was thrown out of the court, literally short of slapping the people who filed the case. It was thrown out of the courts. But they found that since they got there, they found some pliable senators, state senators, not the national level, who basically, Jagdish, you have to understand the situation in California today, as he said, wokeism and this the hate and the political environment that exists today, some people just took advantage of it. They just took advantage, and SB 403 is a manifestation of that hate. Nothing but a manifestation of the hate.
Okay, now the next question is...
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, this is your second question.
I'll ask later, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. This is your second question.
My next question is to Dr. Wrong. Swami, Sri Iyer and Ramesh. When the Jews came back after the Second World War, came back to America, and there was a lot of myth about theirs and spread in Europe and all that, they must have done definitely some thing to be what powerful lobby they are today. Can't the Indian groups led by Dr. Swami, Rajiv Malhotra and other Indians not have a partnership with the Jews of America and the Hindu-Jewish collaboration to tackle such issues?
Dr. Swami, you go ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I think my last visit to United States, we found a lot of support from the Indians for a Hindu, Jew or Jewish, whatever the term that is used, the people of Jewish faith, to form an association. Then Jagdish is the general secretary of the Indo-Israel Association in India. And so he then contacted Israel to find out whether they could recommend some names in the United States who are Jews and who would be ready to collaborate. So that process is going on. And I expect with all of our colleagues to visit United States again in November to formally constitute this body. And this body would then engage with the Jewish community to identify exactly what Jagdish said. Now, how did you do it? And please teach us how to do it, and we will do it in collaboration, cooperation with them. So with the Jewish influence in the media, in the universities, and where the mind making up is a important factor, they can contribute. So we have to bring them on. But the Jews have a soft corner for the Hindus because we have been, despite all the political commitments to Russia and the Arab countries and so on, the broad Indian population, particularly when the whole world was killing Jews, India gave sanctuary to the Jews. And they lived in India, they prospered in India. And then when Israel was formed, they left. And Israel Parliament, in its very, very first meeting, said, "Thank you, India. You're the only country which didn't discriminate against the Jews." So that kind of sentiment is there amongst the Jews. But it's not necessary that the American Jew thinks in these terms, because he's also been Americanized. But with the help of the Israelis, I think we can form a formation. And I think November, I'll meet you all and see that this is brought to a finality.
Sri Iyer, you too. You go ahead.
Dr. Swami, there's a small correction. You're visiting America in the first week of December.
Okay, yeah, all right.
First week of December.
Shri, you wanted to say something quickly, and then Arvind can come in.
I think anything that we can learn from the Jews, who are a much smaller but much more richer minority in the United States, and apply it for ourselves, is going to be good. The one problem that I see again and again, Dr. Swami, and you'll agree with me on this, most of us have come here because we were the cream of the cream, creme de la creme. So when we come here and we have done from zero, most of us came with $7 in our pocket, $4 in our pocket. And then from there, we worked up and we became CEOs. We became very successful at what we do. So with this comes this aham brahmasmi attitude. I'm a Hindu. Who are you to tell me about Hindu? This feeling is there. Until every one of them starts seeing their children getting, you know, victimized in some way or the other, they won't understand what is coming down the pipeline. But then when that happens, it's too late. It has become mainstream. So there has to be some realization. Why are some of us saying this again and again? This is a danger. This is a way to curb a particular people, set of people. And that is what I'm really concerned about. And sir, some of your illustrious students are carrying the fight now. Satish Sharma is considered like one of the, you know, main guys in leading this caste discrimination fight in the United States. I'm just a newsman, sir. I take everybody's things and inputs and give. But I personally, I'm a very proud Hindu. I'm not going to change my last name. Some lousy loudmouths are writing things. You know, I feel like sorry for them. I feel sorry for them because, you know, I'm not going to walk away from this just because you call me something. Your hatred has no basis.
Okay. Yeah. Dr. Swami, unfortunately, I think pretty soon the way things are going in America, all white Americans will also be branded as Brahmins at this rate.
Poetic justice.
Because that's exactly what's happening. So this wokeism is pushing white Americans into a corner, and so basically they'll declare the Brahmins of America. Anyway, Arvindji, please go ahead.
I have another question, which is,
Arvindji, there is a very famous saying called Boston Brahmins, but anyway, we'll come to that another time. But Arvindji, go ahead.
So we'll have several new categories of Brahmins now. Neo-Brahmins.
Kshatriya Brahmins. Kshatriya Brahmins.
I have examined the election data in the U.S. for the last two presidential elections. And in many of the states where either we talk about Donald Trump or we're talking about Biden in the last election, I have seen that Hindu or Indian votes were actually much more than the margin of defeat between the two candidates. That means the sensing force is Hindus in many of the United States. And you can find out how many states we are talking about where Hindus, the population or the votes given to the presidential candidate was more than the margin of defeat. So basically, Hindus are balancing factor. And if Hindus are balancing factor, learning from Indian politics, where there is something called appeasement, this term appeasement is very, very important. All political parties try to appease the vote bank. And if Hindus are important vote bank in the United States, how come these kind of things can happen against Hindus?
So this is something that is a recent phenomenon, Dr. Chaturvedi. It's only like 2-3 years old. The company Equality Labs was formed in 2018. They went through a morphosis because it was done for a different purpose. Then they realized that caste could be weaponized. That's how this happened. But please realize that the percentage of Indian Americans voting away from Democrats is increasing. It used to be 20% Republican, 80% Democrat. It is now 35% Republican and 65% Democrat as of the 2022 elections. I just concluded 6 months ago. By 2024, I have no doubt in my mind it will be more balanced. But that is not enough. They need to understand that. See, it's just like the way Henry Kissinger defined, right? There are no friends or enemies for United States, just interests. Now, take the U.S. word out, put Hindus. That answers the question.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you must also remember that there are many countries which are financing this in the United States.
Oh, yes.
Especially for the Middle East and, Pakistan certainly in Canada is doing a hell of a lot. So I think it requires a great deal of sophistication in dealing with this, and that's why we need to have a association where we pool in the available information and then work out a strategy how to deal with it. But I'm sure if the Hindus unite in the United States, then there'll be no match for them from any other community. So, do we conclude now?
Huh? Same thing is true about India about Hindus in India.
Yeah, that's true.
If Hindus unite,
today it is not. Nobody is ashamed of being calling himself Hindus. I have been through a period in Indian politics where people will say, "I'm a Hindu, but I'm not communal." This is the exact phrase I've been hearing. Now nobody says that. They say, "I'm a proud Hindu." There's a change, and this fermentation is a slow process. So let's not. I will tell our Indian American friends who are here. And by the way, I have still links with America because my daughter is there. So I would say, don't despair, because we have seen much worse things in our own country, and we have come out of it. And people said India will break into 20 countries and so many other things. And now, I think the Hindus stand up, some Hindus stand up in the United States, I'm sure the thing will spread, and we'll soon become a force even in the political field, which is what Ramesh was referring to. Okay, I think we should conclude because we have long passed. This has been a very interesting interaction. I think we should have more of this on this topic over time. Maybe we can have it one in America and beam it to India. So, Jagdish, you are supposed to conclude. No, it is Arvind who usually concludes.
Before I conclude, let me just, Dr. Swami, take a clue from what you said in the beginning, that since Indians, majority of that are Hindus anyway, since the Indians are doing very well, not only in UK, Europe, or United States, they are becoming targets because of the economic jealousy that they have. So maybe Shri Iyer and Ramesh Swami also please consider this economic question, that the prosperity of, relative prosperity of Indians in these countries, and the relative prosperity, maybe because of IT sector or whatever that you have, the kind of positions Indians have acquired in corporate world may be a factor of jealousy. And that is why not many forces are welcoming such a gathering, of such commune, so to say. And that's why they have Hindu phobia and all that. Maybe one of the reasons. Second, I would just like to conclude when Dr. Swami started. He was there in 1962, he said, and look at the condition. We are almost 50 years, 60 years from there. And we had discussed in one of the other programs also when Mr. Shri Iyer had brought these things. And I had expressed my surprise. I said, how can these things happen in an educated country, educated and prosper country like United States of America? But when you investigate and investigate deep into things, especially the social equations, there are new things that you observe. And this is one of the greatest things that is, maybe Shri Iyer will come up with a book on this new topic also, to identify the Hindus being the targets. And I remember Dr. Swami wrote a book in India, Hindus Under Siege. And that was in India. So maybe a similar thing is required to be seen after Dr. Swami's December visit, and when he organizes this kind of a setup where some kind of organization can be made for Hindus and resist the kind of Hindu phobia that they have. Thank you very much, Dr. Swami. Thank you, Shri Iyer ji. Thanks, Jagdish Shetty ji and Ramesh Swami ji. Shri Iyer and Ramesh Swami and Dr. Swami, these are three people who have spent a sizable chunk of their life in the United States. And I'm sure we could not have a better panel to discuss this topic than these three. It is coincident that all three of them are Tamilians and Tamil Brahmins.
Alleged Brahmins.
Yeah.
One is an alleged. Definitely one is an alleged Brahmin.
Yes. I'm as proud of my heritage, my being. I'm a Kshatriya Brahmin, more than a Brahmin, sir. There used to be a community called Kshatriya Brahmins, Pallavas, which is where I come from. Yes. The place, my great-grandparents are Kanchipuram. And there used to be a group called Kshatriya Brahmins. They were well-versed in martial arts. And they also knew the Shastras.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, something is running in my body. I can tell you that.
I can only explain that. Same kind of assertiveness is needed for Hindus in the United States. You know, garb se kaho hum Hindu hain. You know, in India also, there were forces which brought this slogan into limelight. And people adopted. And that's why the Hindus gained politically also in the last 40 years. But anyway, India and US cannot always be compared. Thanks for bringing this new perspective to our viewers about the United States of America. And we will continue to...
happy birthday to Ramesh.
Thank you, sir.
Happy returns of the day. We should have actually done in the beginning. Best wishes to you. Thank you, viewers, for being with us. And next Sunday, 20th August, we'll be again with you with a new topic at 8 p.m. Indian Standard Time with Dr. Subramanian Swami and maybe a new guest. Till then, Namaskar, Jai Hind. But before I bid goodbye to you, let me also express my thanks to the technical team led by Ashish Shetty, Ishwar Iyer, Gadgi Rakesh, Tejas Naval Gul, Swaminathan, Vishal Mehta, and Ajesh Nair. Next Sunday, 8 p.m. Till then, Namaskar, Jai Hind.